All right, let's get started. I'm happy to see that still quite a few of you made it to one of the last sessions of Tech Ready Madrid this year. Welcome. My name is Heinrich Wendel. I'm a program manager on the Visual Studio LightSwitch team. And today, I will be talking about building modern HTML5-based business applications for SharePoint 2013 with Visual Studio LightSwitch. Let me try to set some context first to see like what the experience that you guys have with LightSwitch and SharePoint is so that I can get the level of detail right for you. How many of you, let's start with LightSwitch, how many of you have visited my session on Wednesday about building HTML5 applications? Okay, only a few. Good. So how many of you are SharePoint developers? Quite a few. Mm-hmm. Are you already familiar with the new SharePoint 2013 app model? Yes, as well. Okay, that's good. So I don't have to explain all of those details anymore. And how many of you are web developers? Cool. So I think that will work pretty well for this session. What I'm going to do is I will give you a overview about the base features that LightSwitch will give you first. I have a few slides. I hope to spend not too much time on those. I did spend a bit too much time on those in the last session, so I promise to do better this time. And after that, I have a demo which I plan to spend about 40 minutes on, which shows you how you can use Visual Studio LightSwitch to build HTML5 application and then deploy them on Office 365 or SharePoint 2013 and leverage all the services, all the features that this platform gives you. And finally, at the end of the session, I have a recording of the build keynote yesterday for you, which will give you some insight about what we will deliver in the future. All right? Cool. So let's get started. What is LightSwitch? Have you already heard about LightSwitch? Yes. Yes, okay. So basically, what LightSwitch is, it's a rapid application development environment as part of Visual Studio. So basically, a set of designers that you have within Visual Studio that helps you build those business applications a lot easier. And what we do for you is, with those designers, we do all the plumbing and gluing and all that boilerplate code that you would have to write otherwise for you, so that you can really focus on the core of what you want to do, writing the business logic. And this works not only for small application. We really provide you with a roadmap to scale your application. Usually, people start with kind of a prototype. They only want to develop a prototype to show it to their executives in their business. And executives usually like that prototype, and then they ask, when can we have this application? And the good thing about LightSwitch is, really, you didn't build a prototype, you really built an application so you can deploy it right away if you want to. And then, when the business requirements scale, LightSwitch scales as well, so we have customers who are building LightSwitch applications which actually have more than 500 screens in their application. I wouldn't want to use that application, but just FYI, it is possible. And we do that by creating a three-tier architecture for you under the hood that you will never see if you don't want to see it, if you don't want to care about it, just focus on writing the business logic. And then, after you finish writing your application, you can deploy it. And in terms of deployment, we are very flexible as well, so you have all the options that the Microsoft ecosystem gives you, basically, there. You can deploy it on-premise, still on IIS and SQL databases. You can also go into the cloud, Windows Azure and SQL Azure. And then, what we will focus on today is Office 365 and SharePoint 2013. So you can take advantage of the new functionality that the new SharePoint 2013 app model gives you. Provider-hosted and auto-hosted applications. And we will just deploy to them. One of our MVPs put it in one simple sentence what LightSwitch is, which is down there on the slide. And I think that's actually the best way you can put our design philosophy. LightSwitch is simple on the outside, but rich on the inside. Let's take a look at what kind of applications would you build with LightSwitch. Because let's face it, you wouldn't build every kind of application with LightSwitch. There are certain sweet spots that we are optimized for. And those are the three sweet spots that we have. So first, mobile web business applications. Think about all the CEOs that are asking for some applications to be available on the iPad, and you struggle to deliver them. Lightswitch will help you with that, because what we do is we build HTML5 standards-based applications in a matter of minutes that you can run on the breadth of devices. You can run it on iPad, on iPhone, on Android devices, on Windows devices, of course. Most of this mobile web business applications, I talked about this in my session on Wednesday. I will give a quick repeat of what I did there, but I won't drill into the details too much of this one. We will use it, but we won't go to the customization and extension parts of it. If you're interested in that, you can watch the recording of the session on Wednesday on Channel 9, and we also have the hands-on labs available for those. The second kind of application is desktop business apps. Those are still very common, and this is what we initially started off with Lightswitch 2 years ago. Those are the kinds of applications which usually run on the desktop, not on mobile devices. Those applications are usually used by keyboard and mouse, and you have a lot of grids in there and technology like Legacy.com available. And finally, what we will focus on today, Office 365 and SharePoint 2013 with mainly provider-hosted model. A bit of history. 2 years ago, we started, July 2011, we released the first version of Lightswitch. This was out of band. You had to install it separately from Visual Studio, and it delivered the Silverlight experience that I talked about in browser or on the desktop, and you were able to deploy those applications to Azure Cloud Services. We struggled a bit with the positioning of this because it was out of band. A lot of people asked us whether this is targeted at information workers or professional developers. So we made a shift there, and with our V2, which was released in August 2012 as part of Visual Studio 2012 Professional, we put it in the box. So everybody of you who has Visual Studio 2012 Professional installed already has Lightswitch. File, new project, Lightswitch. And the two main features we introduced there is we rewrote our complete middle tier to be our data services, which is very powerful because it's an industry-wide standard that a lot of applications can talk to, also accepted by our partners like SAP. And now you're also able to deploy the applications to Azure Web Sites. For V3, which we released recently as part of Update 2 to Visual Studio 2012, we added the features that I'm talking about today, which is the HTML5 client and the SharePoint and Office 365 parts. And you should really install this update too. Everybody of you who already has Visual Studio 2012 can install it for free, and you actually get a lot for free in there. And then, because our HTML client is based on open source standards like jQuery and jQuery Mobile, and in order for us to keep pace with the fast development of the open source community, we also already released a runtime update for it, which is supporting jQuery Mobile 1.3, which adds a lot of nice UI widgets to the capabilities that we already have. Finally, what's not on the slide yet? Yesterday, well, actually 2 days ago, on the Build conference in San Francisco, we announced the release of Visual Studio 2013 Preview. And the main feature we added there is, you will see that later, Lightswitch adds a logical view on top of the solution view that Visual Studio has for you. And in order to go to the advanced scenarios, at the moment, you still have to switch between those two different views and the Solution Explorer. And what we did in 2013 is we basically got rid of this switching to make it really easy for you to extend Lightswitch beyond the capabilities that we provide by default. So some of the key features that we introduced in Update 2, and I will not talk about all of them now, but we see a lot of them in the demo. We introduced the HTML client, which is jQuery Mobile 1.3 based, which is most importantly a single page application, which is a big difference to what you have in the MVC sessions that you might have seen. So in MVC, what your application does for every screen that you switch going from one page to another page, it does a complete post back to the server, and the page is rendered on the server and then delivered as HTML on the client. You can have some static parts on the client as well. but it's mostly still static. So for those single-page applications, they completely live on the client, which will give you a much better experience, especially when you're using it on your phone or in a tablet and you use it with your finger. The response of this application is a lot better. And what we also focused on is to support multiple form factors. So we provide you with mechanisms that automatically scale from the smallest phones, like iPhones, to the largest tablets, like 12-inch tablets, without you having to do too much. You know the concept of responsive design from Windows 8 applications, where you have to develop your applications for different states, like the full screen state, as well as the snap state, the smaller one. And it's actually not too easy to get all the details right there. And we help you with a lot of that in LightSwitch out of the box. So then, in terms of SharePoint 2013 app features, what you've always been able to do is, with LightSwitch, you have been able to connect to SharePoint 20, or SharePoint in general, lists, and use those as data sources in your application. What's new now is that we impersonate your identity. So when you as a user connect to the list, all of the operations that you actually do as the user are done under your user identity, not under a system account. We support the provider-hosted and auto-hosted deployment models, and we also support both SharePoint on-premise, SharePoint 2013 on-premise, and Office 365. Some other things that we added in this release is we added support for localizing your app into multiple languages, I think something that's especially important for the European market. Americans don't usually think about that. And we optimized the performance. Think about mobile devices, usually on your phone. Well, you probably had some issues with the network around here. On the phone, the network connection isn't that good all the time, so you want to make sure that the payload that you're transferring between the client and the server is as minimal as possible. So that's something we did, and we basically reduced the payload for OData by switching from the Atom feed to JSON Lite format. So the typical development process that you go through when you develop a LightSwitch application is three steps. First, you always start in LightSwitch. LightSwitch is a data-centric experience, so you always start either defining your data as part of the intrinsic database, or you connect to external data sources that are already available, like your SAP database or some other SQL database that is in your enterprise. And then we provide you with some default screen templates to interact with the data. Think about the default CRUD pattern. Browse through your data, view the details of a given entity, and then edit or add a new entity. And after you did that, and that's really a matter of 5 minutes, and you'll see that later, after you did that, you already have a full-featured three-tier application running in the background, and you didn't have to worry for the architecture at all. We did that for you, based on all the existing Microsoft standards that you have probably seen in other sessions, like Entity Framework, ASP.NET, and all that kind of stuff. We wired it up in the background for you so that you don't have to worry about it. Then you refine your application. There's no business productivity application without business logic. And that's actually the core part of what we think that you want to do in the application, right? The business logic. So we provide several hooks where, from our designers, you jump into the code. You have the usual options of code languages, VB, C# on the middle tier that we generate for you, or JavaScript on the client side. And that's where you author your business logic. Then you also customize your screens. You change the layout, you change which fields are displayed, dynamically hiding and showing certain fields, and usually companies have a corporate design, so you want to apply the branding from that company to your application as well, and that's really no problem either. Also, defining custom queries, you want to show your entities in a sort order, you want to filter it using certain criteria, and those kinds of things. That's the refinement part. And finally, if that's not good enough yet, you want to extend your application beyond what we give you by default, we have a huge ecosystem of extensions available on Visual Studio Gallery, over 100 extensions from our partners, and there are extensions for custom controls, controls that we don't provide out of the box, more complex controls. There are extensions for custom data sources, like you want to connect to a SQLite database, you want to connect to a CSV file, Oracle database, a lot of extensions on Visual Studio Gallery for you in order to do that. So let's take a look at the architecture that we built for you in the background. And really, if you don't want to worry about it, we can skip that as well, because you don't need to worry about it. We do that by default. And with every new version of Lightstage, which we provide, V1, V2, V3, we upgrade you in terms of the architecture automatically. On the right side, you can see the data sources. So you start with the data. You use the intrinsic SQL Server database, or you connect to existing databases. On Azure, you can connect to SharePoint lists. You can connect to any old data service, and also use the extensions I already talked about. Then, on the middle tier, there we use the technology that I already talked about. You have IIS7 as the server. And on top of that, there's ASP.NET. Nothing crazy. We use WCS data services in order to expose the OData servers endpoints. And on top of that, that's where we provide the value with our LightSwitch runtime, the data workspace concept. So typically, if you're interacting with data, you have to, and you have multiple users using your application at the same time, you run into problems like conflicts of multiple users editing the same data at the same time. And that's what our data workspace solves for you, that concept. We provide automatic merge handling and that kind of stuff. And on top of that, where you write your business logic, that's the submit pipeline and the queries. On the client, you've got two options. Either you write your mobile applications with our new HTML5 client, or if you still want to have desktop applications for mouse and keyboard usage, you can still go for the Silverlight route there. And again, we use WCS data services to talk to the middle tier. And our data workspace concept handles things like dirty checking, validation, and all that kind of stuff automatically for you without going to a session where they explain you just in an hour of time how to do this specific thing. On the client, you then define your screens, method, and controls, and that's what really makes up your application. So the great part of this architecture, that's where you come into play, that's where you define what you want to do. In terms of hosting, we already quickly talked about that one. You've got the choice between on-premise and cloud. The slide looks more difficult than it actually is. So just think about two options. On-premise, SharePoint 2013, that's the right part of it, or in the cloud, Office 365. In terms of hosting models, for the new SharePoint 2013 app model, on-premise, you would use the provider-hosted model because auto-hosted is not yet available. In the cloud, you have the choice between auto-hosted, which means that Office 365 takes care of deploying all of your files actually in the background into Azure for you. You don't have to worry for it, as well as the database. You don't have to deploy the database yourself. Or provider-hosted, and in the provider-hosted model, you take care of deploying your database on your web files separately from the actual app, which lives on SharePoint. And that's what this slide describes again. How many of you are familiar with the SharePoint 2013 app model again? Just a few, OK. So before SharePoint 2013, they still have the solution model, which is quite different from the app model. And the core difference there is, in the solution model, all of your logic was executed on the SharePoint farm itself. It was kind of a problem in terms of upgrading your SharePoint farm and in terms of making sure that none of the solutions actually crash your SharePoint farm. So for 2013, they made a bold move and moved all of that logic from the SharePoint farm into a separate web server. And that's basically what this model talks about. You have three options there: SharePoint hosted, auto-hosted, and provider hosted. For LightSwitch, you cannot use SharePoint hosted, because SharePoint hosted still means it runs on the SharePoint farm. But you have some limitations there. And the limitation basically is you're not allowed to run server-side code on the farm in the SharePoint-hosted model. Since LightSwitch automatically produces a three-tier architecture with the middle tier where your business logic, the important thing for you, runs, this model is out of the game. So you have the choice between auto-hosted or provider-hosted. If you don't want to worry for the deployment, go for auto-hosted. Provider-hosted gives you a lot more flexibility. So this is the anatomy of a cloud-hosted SharePoint app. And with cloud-hosted, we really mean auto-hosted or provider-hosted, because both of them are hosted in a separate web server. Usually, your cloud-hosted SharePoint app consists of two parts. You have your app manifest, which is a description of your app. And this, at first, lives in your marketplace, either the consumer-focused public office marketplace, or every Office 365 tenant that you have as part of your enterprise has its own corporate catalog. And you deploy the app manifest to the corporate catalog. And after you deploy that to the corporate catalog, every user, everyone who has a SharePoint site in your enterprise can install the app on his site. And while installing, it will, in the auto-hosted model, provision all the web files on the server automatically for you. And then if the user goes to SharePoint, he will automatically, based on the information that is stored in this manifest, be redirected to the web server. Sounds more complicated than it is. I'll show you it's actually pretty simple. So those are the SharePoint features that we provide in the new Update 2 version of LightSwitch. Basically, you start off with the LightSwitch application, and then you need to enable SharePoint on it in order to leverage the new functionality. In terms of identity, you have two options. You either go for S2S or ACS. Don't need to worry about the implementation details. The choice you have to make here is, are you going on-premise, then you go to S2S. Are you going into the cloud, then you will use ACS. I already talked about the SharePoint list attached that uses the user's identity. You also have all the user's information available programmatically in our API on the application SharePoint and application user APIs. And then in terms of publishing, we have a publish wizard, which makes it really easy. You only have to select the choice between provider hosted and auto-hosted and publish the application. What we do in the background for you, this is the Solution Explorer, how it looks in LightSwitch, is we add the SharePoint project to your existing LightSwitch project. So that means you get some nice functionality from LightSwitch, which makes it easier to do certain things. But we don't limit you if you want to do everything which SharePoint can do out of the box. If you want to do workflows, custom lists, remote event receivers, all that kind of stuff, LightSwitch doesn't have a specific experience for it, because it doesn't need to. The SharePoint project, the default SharePoint project, which we add to your solution, enables all of that functionality for you. So for the HTML client, which is the choice you would most likely use for SharePoint, our design goal was to enable the breadth of devices. So that means it runs on Android, it runs on iPad, it runs on iPhone, it runs on the Windows devices, basically everything which supports HTML5. And it's optimized for mobile first, for usage with your finger, with touch, which is quite different from what you had before, different user experience paradigms. And we basically align with what Windows 8 is doing there. We also have a consistent design experience. So if you're already used to developing SharePoint, LightSwitch applications with Silverlight, the HTML experience from the designer perspective is actually very, very similar. And it's based on the standards jQuery, jQuery Mobile, CSS 3.0, and HTML5. And again, this means, in terms of which devices are supported, iOS 5 and 6, Android 4, Windows XP, and Windows Phone 8. Because of limited support of HTML5 on Android 2.3 and Windows Phone 7.5, there are some limitations on those devices. All right, let's come to the demo. Any questions up to this point? Good. So Here's the scenario. You are the Contoso Food Company. Basically, you're a big manufacturer and producer and distributor of different kinds of foods. And you already have an Office 365 site in your business. How many of you already signed up for an Office 365 developer site? Okay, quite a few. For those who haven't, it's really easy. Just go to dev.office.com, click Start, and then sign up for an Office 365 developer site. We offer you this as part of your MSDN subscription, or you can have a 30-day trial if you click here. And that's really all you need in order to do what I will do in this demo now, this Office 365 developer subscription. All right, so back to the scenario. Contoso Food. You're already using Office 365, and you use it in order to manage your list of customers and your list of products. So you have a lot of customers already in those lists, and you have a lot of products already here that you sell to those customers. And the customers, they are basically the supermarkets that offer your products. Now, what you want to do is you want to write a mobile application that helps your sales representatives that actually go to those stores to survey how well the products are displayed in those stores. So when they didn't have any tablets, they would use just some paper and pen to go there and transcribe that information later into the PC. Now we want to reduce this transcription step and just make it automatic by providing them with an application that they can use on the phone and the tablet. So let's start with that. In Visual Studio, you go to a new project, and you have the category light switch here. My mouse would be working. And you have the option between the traditional Silverlight-based light switch applications and the newer HTML applications, and I highly recommend using HTML here. And on the middle tier, you still have the choice between Visual Basic and Visual C Sharp. That's the middle tier part of it. On the client, if you choose the HTML application, you're writing JavaScript code. So let's call this survey app go. Take a few seconds. One thing I still wanted to show on this side is you already have some data in here, and you have this list. And this list is actually associated with a workflow in the background. So if you open the list and go to the SharePoint settings, workflow settings, what you see here is there's already a custom workflow associated with that list, which kicks off every time you create a new entity in the customer list. At the moment, there is no workflow running, but I'll show you later how this will kick in. Back to Visual Studio. The first thing I want to show you is how you import those lists into your LightSwitch applications and can interact with them the same way that you can in SharePoint, but on a mobile interface then. So the first thing we need to do is we need to enable SharePoint support for this application. In the properties sheet, there's a SharePoint tab. And that's where you have Enable SharePoint. Clicking that asks you for the developer site that you just signed up for. So mine is this one. I click OK. I will probably be asked for my credentials as well. Sometimes it happens later. And after enabling this, what it does in the background now, it adds this SharePoint project that you've seen. And it also adds all the references to the SharePoint client object model so that you can write business logic against SharePoint. In the lower part of this properties sheet, you have two options in terms of authentication. And that's the S2S with this ACS choice. It's simple. If you are in the cloud, you go for ACS, the first option. If you are on-premise on your SharePoint 2013 farm, you need to use the second option here. So now that I enabled SharePoint, I can go back. And this is our, we call it logical view, where you see the server, that's your middle tier, and the client, that's your front end. And on the server, I start with the data. So I want to connect to the existing data. So what I say is add data source. SharePoint. And now it asks me for the URL of SharePoint again. It will automatically detect my user identity or ask me for it. Keep me signed in. Now it retrieves a list of all the lists that are available on that SharePoint site already. And it will give me the choice of which of those lists I really want to import and use in my application. So lists, and you see there are actually a lot of lists in this application. Most of them are hidden lists that you don't see in the SharePoint user interface. The ones that we care for at the moment are products and customers. And let me rename the name of the data source to site data so that my code snippets will work later. So now it imported the schema of those lists that you have in SharePoint and shows them in, this is our one of the three designers that we have, the entity designer. And you see, you have customers. And customers actually have some relation to the user information list. So SharePoint automatically tracks created by and modified by fields, and that's the relation to the user. And you also have the products list here. Now what I want to show is how quickly you can create an application that connects to this data or that you can modify it in your HTML5 application. So we're going to add a screen to it. And we have three screen templates by default. Those are the ones for the CRUD paradigms that you want to use. But you can extend beyond them if that's not good enough for you. So for we have browse data view and add edit details. And I chose the browse data screen. And I want to browse the list of customers that I have here. Clicking OK, it will create a new screen for me. And what you see here is our second designer. This is the screen designer. And it has two parts. On the left side, you see the view model. So what we do for you is we automatically create a MVVM architecture in the background, model view, view model, without you needing to worry about how to do that yourself. And that's your view model part. In the middle, you see your screen. You see you can have a number of tabs in your screen, and then you have the list of customers. And every row template there is represented by the summary field of the customer. F5ing this application already gives you this complete three-tier application that runs on any mobile device. What it actually does now in the background, you see that in the top left, bottom left corner, install app for SharePoint. Because I already enabled SharePoint, it's now talking to my SharePoint developer site and installing the app on it first. During F5, the web files will run on the local host, but the app manifest still needs to be deployed to SharePoint. So what you see here is the consent dialog. This is very similar to what you're used when you install a new application on your Windows phone, for example. It asks you whether it is allowed to access certain services. On the phone, it would be camera or your location services. On SharePoint, it's like document libraries and lists and sites and your user profile and that kind of stuff. So I trust this application because I built it myself. And now, what you see is the list of customers that we also had in our developer side, the same list of customers. And what we did for you automatically in the background is we already enabled certain things like paging. And if I would have enough customers in my list, you would see that after I scroll to the bottom of the list, it would actually do the paging. So, but there's a lot of stuff that you actually already get for free here. Now, we want to create the other screens as well for editing a customer or adding a new one. So in the command bar, let's add a new button. And for all of the entities that you have on your screen, we provide you with those defaults by methods by default so that you just have to hook them up. So we want to add a new customer. And there is no screen for that available yet, so it asks us to create a new screen. Add edit customer, customer details, OK. And now you see this is the screen with all of the fields that a customer has by default. We don't want to include the custom workflow or the content type created by and modified by are automatically filled out by SharePoint. So we just remove them, save it. So the interesting part now is I didn't stop the application, right? I'm still running the application in the background. I was live editing the screen. And I don't have to rerun the application. I just have to reload the application Internet Explorer, and it's already updated with a new button in the command bar to add a new customer. So let's add a new customer. And let's say this is a Contoso supermarket. And last survey date, I think it's optional. Don't have to fill it out. So now I have a new customer here, Contoso Supermarket. Let's switch back to the SharePoint site and reload this one. That's where I want to show you that we were really editing this list, because the Contoso Supermarket is now showing up in the list. And if you view the properties of it, what you see is this identity flow created by, this is the current time, if you convert it to Pacific Standard Time, and by Survey App on behalf of Heinrich Wendel. So that's where you see really the user identity is flowing through the application to SharePoint. Also, if we go into the workflow settings now, you should see that there's actually one workflow running in the background now, because we added a new item. And even though we did that in the Lightswitch application, we're really talking to the SharePoint list. So everything that you have in SharePoint continues to work. And that's what kicked off this workflow in the background. All right. Are you still with me? Good. So now what we want to do is we want to create the intrinsic database in addition to the existing SharePoint lists, which contains the surveys that the sales representative is actually using when he's going to the supermarkets. So let's add a new table here. So what you see is now we have two data sources in the project, application data and site data. And you can add any number of data sources here. And the power is what I will show you in a second, is you can relate different data sources, so-called virtual relations. So let's name this entity survey. And we want to have a sales representative name who fills out the survey. He is a string. Then we want to have, we want to see what the cleanliness of the product is while it is displayed in the supermarket. So I will make that an integer, but I will actually make it a choice list with different choices. So let's say it can be poor, fair, good, or excellent. And let's do the same with the placement, the shelf placement. Where's the product placed? Is it at the bottom, on eye level, or on the top, depending on that, if customers see it or not. So shelf placement. Also an integer. Choice list, bottom, eye level, and top. And now, every survey has a product, and every survey has a customer associated with it. So that's what we're going to do now, create those relationships. Add a new relation, and it shows us all of the entities that I have available in my application. So one survey has exactly one customer, and a customer can have many surveys. OK. You see the relationship showing up here. One survey also has exactly one product, and a product can have any number of surveys. OK. Because it's a virtual relation, we need to add this ID property to it as well, which we use to identify the other database. I will make that non-optional for now. And I also don't want to include it on the screens that we create for you by default. So remember, step one, define your data. Step two, define your screens. So let's get rid of those screens. We don't need them anymore. What we really want to do is we want to create new surveys. So the first screen that we're going to create is a screen which browses through the list of available surveys. OK. And we want to make this screen a bit nicer. So instead of a list, we'll probably make it a tile list. And what we want to display here is just the customer and the product. And then we also need a screen to create a new survey. So add and edit new survey, new screen. OK. And in here, we still need to fill out everything. And then back on the browser screen, clicking an existing survey should also open up the dialog to edit this survey and modify it later. So there's an item tab action on the tile list, edit selected. And now it sees we already have a screen actually for that created. So it will just reuse them. OK, F5. So now it's really only doing an F5. It's not installing the SharePoint app again, because we didn't make any modifications to the manifest in the background. This really speeds up the F5 development process. At the moment, we have no items in our server list. So let's create a new survey. And let's say, this is me. I'm the sales representative. And the cleanliness is good. And the placement is bottom, unfortunately. And then the customer, we load the list of customers and this picker from SharePoint. It's not sorted yet. We'll fix that later. So let's say it's 7C's imports product chocolate and save that survey. Now we have a new survey. Clicking that survey again opens this dialog again where you can edit it later if you want to. I talked about the responsive design principle before. So this screen size that you see here is approximately the screen size that you have on your surface. If you resize this browser window to be smaller, it will still work, like, let's say, to about this size, which is approximately the size of your iPad, 1024, 768. And now we're going even smaller, let's say an iPhone, which is about 3.5-inch. And at a certain point of time, what you see is the two columns are floating in one column, and the dialog is becoming a screen. And I can still like edit the customer instead of 7C's imports. It's probably just supermarket and still on the phone. This application is totally usable. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Ah. OK. So now let's come to the core of what you want to do. You want to write your business logic, right? Business logic in Lightswitch to interact with your SharePoint data that's already existing, which is related to your SQL intrinsic database. At the moment, looking at this, at this dialog that we have here, you still have to fill out the sales representative name, which is me, who I'm using that application. But since I'm connected to SharePoint, SharePoint already knows who am I. So SharePoint can actually take that and do that automatically for us. Let's write that business logic. On the surveys entity, we have this write code dropdown. You have this dropdown basically on every designer, three designers, screen, query, and entity that we have. And that's where we provide you with the hooks to go into the business logic. So in that case, while we are inserting a new survey, we automatically want to fill out the name of the logged in user. Not while we update it, actually. Inserting. So, and because I chose Visual Basic as my middle tier language, this is dropping me into Visual Basic code now. So, I have some code snippets prepared here for you, but it's really easy. Well, this one is. So, entity is my entity, my survey entity. Sales representative name is the property on the entity. And I want to automatically associate that with application.user.fullname. No, I want to do the name. So now if I F5 the application again and fill out the form, I will just leave the sales representative field empty. And then I'll go back into it to show you that it actually filled it out by default in the background for you. Let's make this a bit bigger again. Let's add another survey. Excellent. That's a good supermarket customer. 7C's product. Coffee. Safe. I'm not filling out the sales representative name. So now going into this one again, you see, this field is filled out with a pretty cryptic idea at the moment. This is the idea that SharePoint is using in the background to identify a user. If I would have used the full name instead of the name field, you would actually have the real name, my name, in that field. But because I want to write some more business logic in the background, I need a unique identity here. All right. Now, when I go to the supermarket as a sales representative, I only want to see the surveys that I actually wrote. So let's filter this existing list on the server to only show those surveys. You see, at the moment, there are two surveys, but only one is associated with my user identity. So in the surveys write code dropdown, we have the surveys filter method. And that's where we can create a new filter to actually filter the surveys that are displayed for the current user that's logged in. And you see, now the list loads again, but only one survey is showing up. And that's the one that I just created as a second step where I really put in the sales representative name. One more thing. Remember, going back to the SharePoint side, a customer had a last survey date. So whenever you create a new survey for a given product, you want to update the last survey date on the customer. So now what we're doing is we're creating a new entity in the intrinsic SQL database, and at the same time, we are updating the SharePoint lists, a field in the SharePoint list as well. So in the inserted method, so after the entity has been inserted into the intrinsic database, we are going to modify the SharePoint database. So what this code snippet is doing is simply querying for the company that we selected, and then updating the last survey date to today. F5, and then we'll create a new survey, and I'll show you how in SharePoint the last survey date has actually been updated. Okay, let's see. I could remove this field now because we don't have to fill it out anymore. Fair, bottom, that's not a good customer. Let's say it's quick stop, and the product is New England clam chowder. Save. It's saved, and on the SharePoint site, quick stop, you see, last updated date, 6/28. That's today. That was right now. Let's take a look at the properties where you see that the identity is flowing through again. 5 a.m., that's just that's the current time in Redmond. By me. So it's really now. All right. That was the how do I write business logic that interacts with SharePoint and my intrinsic database part. Now, let's take it one step further. A big thing that SharePoint offers to you is identity and user profiles. So if you're familiar with SharePoint, what you get there is you have your admin interface. And basically, you have a set of users in SharePoint or Office 365. Think about it as your Active Directory. And that's really what it is in Office 365. What SharePoint is doing on-premise, it synchronizes your Active Directory into SharePoint and imports all the properties that you have set on a user, like the department, whether it's HR or IT or whatever, or additional properties into SharePoint. And then you can extend it with additional properties. So in that case, I want to create a new property which associates every user in my organization with a given default customer that he's serving. So manage user properties, and that's where I'm just going to create this property. And we'll call it survey customer. And we will allow users to edit the values of this property. And we will show it on the edit details page of his user profile. OK? I need a display name as well. All right. So now, if I go to my newsfeed, my site, I can see this new property that I just created, and I can fill out a value for it. So this is my site. In the About Me section, it tells me about all the properties that I have. And if I edit my profile here, I can fill out all of the details. Some of those are already pre-filled for me. I can fill out the contact details, my phone number, my email address, and that kind of stuff. And then I have those custom properties, and that's where I just created the survey customer property. So now I want to say, well, my default customer, let's say it's, what customers do we have? Richter Supermarket. I think it's the Richter Supermarkt, actually. Let's quickly check. Richter Supermarkt. All right. Save all and close. Yes, OK. So now I have this additional property assigned to me. And now what we're going to do is, back in Visual Studio, we write some additional business logic here so that when I create a new survey, I actually don't have to select the customer anymore either, because that's coming from the SharePoint user profile service now. So in order to do that, we need to switch to the file view of the Solution Explorer. In Visual Studio 2013, there's only one view. It's merged, file view and logical view. At the moment, you still have to switch for those advanced scenarios. There's a button up here, toggle view. And that's where you see all the projects, the three-tier architecture that we create for you in the background. So there's an HTML client, that's your front end. There's a server, that's your middle tier. And then there's SharePoint, that's your SharePoint app. And since we're writing business logic on a server, that's where we need to add some references now to actually call into SharePoint and use their client object model. So let's add a reference here. Assemblies, extension, SharePoint. And we need to add the reference to the user profile service. OK. And then we talked about those permissions before. Your app has to request permissions to do certain things on the site. And the app also has to request permissions to talk to the user profile service. So in your app manifest, that's the place where you define the name of your app and the prerequisite and the supported languages and all the kind of stuff. There's also a tab to define what permission the app requests from the user that installs the app. You have a list of permissions here that you can choose from. And we need the user profile social permission. Yeah. Make it full control. Save it. And now we need to write the logic to actually automatically associate the user. So back to the entity, to the dropdown. While we are inserting the survey, before we save it, we automatically associate the customer with it. So let's add some imports first. Then basically the library that I referenced, we need to import that, client user profiles and SharePoint client. That is the SharePoint client object model. There's a lot of documentation on MSDB and available about how you use it. And then this snippet of code. So remember, we already set the sales representative's name automatically. And now we also set the customer automatically. What we do here is we get the client context, a people manager object, that's the API to talk to the user profile service. And then we are getting all the properties for the currently logged in user. And the survey customer property is one of those. So we're executing this query. And then from our list of customers, we are getting the one that is in the user profile defined of the user. And finally, entity.customer equals to customer. We set it on the entity. Now, since I changed the app manifest, It will actually uninstall the SharePoint app first, install it again, ask me whether I trust it with the additional permissions I assigned to it, and then run again. So whenever you change something in the SharePoint project itself, F5 will take a bit longer because it has to redeploy the application to your SharePoint tenant as well. So now you see, allow application access to user profiles, full control. That's what I requested, and I trust it. And now, adding a new survey. Don't have to fill out a sales survey. I should remove that field. Now it's good and top. I don't select a customer here anymore because that's in my user profile defined. Product, in that case, let's go here. And now I save. And in the business logic, oh, I should probably have set a breakpoint. I'll do that later. It automatically fills out the customer. There's a small bug here. It doesn't display it until I actually reload the application. We've fixed that bug in a newer version. So now I reload it, and you see, that's the entity I just created. Automatically filled out the Richter Supermarkt property that was coming from SharePoint, from my user profile, into my intrinsic database. All right? So I have one more sample. So if you think about SharePoint, one of the core capabilities that SharePoint gives you is social news feeds. And what I want to do here now is, when I create a new survey, I automatically want to post a new post to my personal news feed so that other users in the enterprise are aware of what I am doing and I can comment on it and we can start a discussion around the customer, whether they have similar experiences and that kind of stuff. So on SharePoint, you see, in my newsfeed, I already did a test run, and that's why you see there is already an entry in here. That's from yesterday. But I will show you how to create such an entry in your social newsfeed now on your own. So back to the survey app. And now, in the surveys inserted. So after I inserted the survey into my database, I want to create a new post here. And in order to do that, I have a code snippet as well. This one. And I think I need to import some more references here. Microsoft SharePoint Client Social. So very simple, basically a three-liner of code again, and that's the power of the SharePoint APIs. I get the client context again, and then there is a class social feed manager, which I use to interact with the social feed. And all I'm going to do is I create a new social post, and I say, created a new survey for the company name and the product name. And I create this post, execute query. That's all I need. Working with a social feed API requires an additional permission again. So I need to go to my app manifest and add the tenant permission here as well. Full control, F5. And now, again, I changed the app manifest so it's redeploying the application to SharePoint. And when I create a new survey, it will automatically add this post to the user's news feed. And everybody who has access rights to that user's news feed can see it. I get the consent dialog again because I added additional permissions. I trust my own application. And I add a new survey. Still didn't remove the field, but I could. I won't fill them out. Chocolate, more chocolate. Save. There's more bug here again, but reloading the application will show it's Richter Supermarkt chocolate. Now, reloading my personal newsfeed up there shows a second entry in the social newsfeed. Thank you. So think about SharePoint. What SharePoint offers is identity, hosting and deployment, social, documents, lists, and all of that kind of stuff. I already showed you parts of that, and all I showed you is available in the current version that you can get in Visual Studio 2012 Update 2. Visual Studio 2013 Preview removes this switch between the logical and the physical view. And we are also working on more on enabling documents and people as first-class citizens in your application. And yesterday in the Build keynote, in the second day keynote that Satya, our president, was having, our director of the Cloud Tools platform, Jay Schmelzer, actually showed a preview of those features. And I want to just 5 minutes run this video for you so that you see which direction we are heading with this stuff.
E65 as a programmable surface area. We talked a lot about, you know, building SaaS applications using the services Scott talked about. But what if you were a lab developer, a line of business application developer, or a SaaS application developer, and could use all of the power of Office as part of your application? And that's what we are enabling with the programming surface area of Office. What that means is the rich object model of Office, everything from there, the social graph, the identity, presence information, document workflows, document libraries, all of that is available for you to use using modern web APIs within your application. You can, in fact, have the Chrome either in the Office clients or in SharePoint, and you can have the full power of the backend in Azure. And of course, the idea here is to be able to do all of that with first-class tool support. To show you some of this in action, I wanted to invite up on stage Jay Schmelzer from our Visual Studio team to show you some of the rapid application development in Office. Jay, come on in.
Thank you.
Thank you. The requirements and expectations and importance of business applications has never been greater than it is today. Modern business applications need to access data available inside and outside the organization. They need to enable individuals across the organization to connect and easily collaborate with each other in rich and interesting ways. And the applications themselves need to be available on multiple different types of devices and form factors. As developers, we need a platform that provides a set of services that meet the core requirements of these applications. And we need a tool set that allows us to productively build those applications while also integrating in with our existing DevOps processes across the organization. What I want to show you this morning is a quick look at some things we're still working on inside of Visual Studio to enable developers to build these modern business applications that extend the Office 365 experience, leveraging those services available both from Office 365 and the Windows Azure platform. Of course, doing it inside of a Visual Studio experience that allows the developer to focus on the unique aspects of their business and their application, not spending as much time in boilerplate code. To do that, we're going to focus on the Human Resources Department at Contoso, who's been using Office 365 to manage the active job positions across the organization. And we want to create a new application that allows individuals in the company to submit potential candidates for open positions from within their Office 365 site using whichever device they happen to have available at the time. So to do that, we'll switch over to Visual Studio, and we'll see that we have a new Office 365 Cloud Business App project template available to us. This project goes and builds on the existing apps for Office and apps for SharePoint capabilities that are surfaced as part of that new cloud app model Satya was talking about, and provides us a prescriptive solution structure for building a modern business application. I mentioned data is a core part of this, and you see we've already started creating the definition for a new table that we'll use to store our potential candidates. What this Office 365 Cloud Business App does for us is surface additional data types that provide access to these core capabilities of the Office 365 and Windows Azure platforms. Some examples of that we see here that the referred by is typed as a person, giving us access to all the capabilities in Office 365 associated with an Office 365 or Azure Active Directory user. The document, their resume, is stored as a typed document, so we can store it in a document library and leverage the rich content management and workflow capabilities associated with Office documents. We also need to be able to go and pull in data from elsewhere. In our case, we want to go and grab data from that existing SharePoint list the human resources team is using to manage active positions so that our users can choose a potential position they think this candidate is appropriate for. You see, I've already added that, so it's in my project. We'll just go and connect it up between the candidate and our job postings, specify the relationship, and say, okay, and now we have this virtual relationship between our Office 365 list and our SQL Azure database. Okay, the next thing we want to do, though, is really enable that people interaction. So you notice when I look over here at the candidate table, if I select this, you'll see right from here, I have the ability to have the application interact with my corporate social network on my behalf as I'm doing interesting things in the application. So we have the data model defined. Next thing we need to do is create the UI model. Users of business applications today expect a modern look and feel, a modern experience, but they also want it to be consistent. Visual Studio gives you great ways of doing this by providing a set of patterns that are going to be consistent across your application. We'll select the browse pattern, just choose the default pattern, choose the table we care about, and now let Visual Studio go and create for us a set of experiences for browsing, viewing, editing, and updating that candidate information. So we have our data model, we have our UI model. The last thing we want to do is go in and actually write some business logic. In this case, back in the Entity Designer, we'll go in and we'll leverage the data pipeline where we can interact with data as it's moving in and out of the application. In this case, we'll use our validate, and what we'll do is we'll just go in and make sure that the only folks that can go and actually set or modify the interview date are members of the HR department. And here's another example where we see the power of surfacing those underlying platform capabilities. I'm able to reach into the current user, into their Azure Active Directory settings, and grab the current department and validate it against the checks we want to make. Let's go ahead and set a breakpoint here. I think we're probably in good shape. Forgot to set a breakpoint, but anyway, so we're going to launch the application, and Visual Studio is going to go, packages up, send the manifest off to our remote Office 365 developer site, and then launch our application. We have no candidates yet, so we'll create a new one. Last night, when we were talking about this stuff, Scott seemed pretty excited about what we were doing, so maybe he'd be an interesting person for us to work with. When I go in and actually start specifying who it is that's going to refer this person, you see I'm by default getting the list of users available on this Office 365 site because I typed it as person. So we'll select Jim there, one of our team members. Go ahead and upload a document that is Scott's resume. And we'll specify an interview date. Maybe we'll go out here into September. Last thing we want to do is go choose which of the positions we think is appropriate for Scott. He's going to be new to the team, so we'll maybe choose a little more junior role for him so that he can be successful. When we hit save, if we'd actually set that breakpoint, we would see our business logic would have been executed, and we'd be able to get that rich debugging experience you've come to know and expect from Visual Studio. We now see we have our candidate. When I drill in and look at it, you see that we're getting that consistency of experience. I'm getting presence information for the person. When I hover over it, we see the contact card, a little misplaced. But if I want to have a conversation with Jim right now, I can go ahead and do that right from within the application just because we leverage those underlying capabilities. Of course, in the document, we can see the properties of the document. We could view it in the Word web application right from the site, or we could follow it if we want to do that as well. Now, I noticed one thing here. I've got this extra ID showing up. So let me go flip over to Visual Studio, and we'll look at the View Candidate page. And just like we can with any other web development, we can just go in here, and while the application's running, we'll just remove that. We'll save those changes. Flip back over here and just kind of do a little quick refresh. And now when I go in, you'll see that, hey, that extraneous value is no longer there. The other thing you'll notice is that in addition to the values we specified for our SQL data, we also have built in the ability to do the basic tracking of, hey, who was the last person who created or modified this record? Just core requirements of a business application. Last thing we'll look at is on the news feed. When I click over to that, you'll see that the application has gone and interacted on my behalf, right, and entered things into our internal social network, letting people know that, hey, I just submitted somebody as a potential new candidate. So if folks want to follow them and so forth. Okay, our application is looking good. Time to go get it integrated with our
That's where we're going with that stuff. How do you like it? Cool. We got 5 minutes left. if you want to, I can still show you how you actually, after you develop the application, how you publish it to the corporate catalog. And then I can open it up for questions. Okay? So like you have the public office marketplace where consumer apps are going to live, every Office 365 tenant, every business has its own corporate marketplace where they can deploy applications to that any user in the business can then install on their specific site. And that's what we're going to do now. So let's see. I need to stop the application first and also retract it from my existing developer site. Retract. Uninstalling the app for SharePoint. So it's saying retract successful. So now we need to publish the application. Right-click the project, publish. This will open up our publish wizard. And here we have two options, auto-hosted or provider-hosted. In order to make it simple for now, I use the auto-host because then SharePoint or Office 365 takes care of all of that in the background for me. It asks me whether I want to redirect the data connections. So think about enterprise development cycle. Usually you have a test environment, you have a dev environment, you have a dev environment, you have your production environment, and for each of those you probably have different databases as well. And that's where you can change the connection string that I use to connect to the SharePoint lists in order to test your applications through those different environments. Summary, it's the survey app, it's SharePoint app, auto-hosted, everything is auto-hosted, okay. I get a small warning because I didn't change the release configuration to release. It's still debugged. It still includes all the symbols. Let's skip over that for now. Usually, you would change it. Now it's publishing the application. And while it's doing that, well, it's creating an application package that I can then take and upload to the corporate catalog. So while it's doing that, let me show you where your corporate catalog lives. In your Office 365, go to Admin SharePoint. And here, you have your apps, app catalog. And that's a specific SharePoint site, which is your corporate catalog. And you have different categories in here. And most important for us for now is the apps for SharePoint category. And you see, currently, our corporate catalog is pretty empty. And that's where we're going to upload the new app to. So it background, it opened the directory where I created this new app package, .app. That's the SharePoint app package. But just dragging and dropping this on here, it will upload the application to SharePoint. It's completed. And when I edit the properties of this one, I can fill out some additional details about it. I could put in a specific logo for the application to the corporate design, can provide a description, a category, and so forth. What I'm going to do here is I will make this a featured application so that it shows up on the top of everybody's list. And there is one hosting license for this application available. So now the application is in my corporate catalog, and I will switch back to my developer site or my site that I want to install the app on, which is this one. Clicking Site Contents, and then adding an app. So here you now have two different options, apps you can add and from your organization, and that's where this app will now show up. Noteworthy, on the top, featured, survey app, that's the app we just created. And just clicking this app will show the content dialog again. I will trust it. And now it will be installed on my personal site, and since it's an auto-hosted application in the background, it will automatically provision a new Azure website and a new SQL Server database for you in a matter of only seconds, and the app is available for you to use. Takes a few seconds. But in contrast, if you would have to do that on your own, it's actually pretty quick. It's installed. I click it. It opens up the app. And you see, if you look at the title of this tab, that's where it redirects it to Azure. Probably not installed correctly yet. Let's wait another second. Oops. Demo fail. OK, usually it would just redirect you to the app. You have seen the app and it will run under your user permissions with everything we just built in, and it works. All right? So that's it. Please, if you like the session, don't forget to fill out the evals. And if you have any questions, please. Sorry, say that again. Sorry, I still didn't understand you. Branding is very easy as well. In the background for this HTML client, we're using jQuery Mobile. And jQuery Mobile has a tool called Theme Roller, which allows you in the browser, even for non-designers, to change all the colors around, to change the logos around in a matter of seconds. I showed that in my session on Wednesday, and it's also available on the hands-on lab on the HTML5 session that I have on Wednesday. And that's where you can find it. Any hooks into offline storage, offline mode for the HTML client? Unfortunately, we don't have any default hooks at the moment. But you can always drop into JavaScript code and write your own hooks in the background. SQLite, that's an external data source that you can use with an extension that you can find on Visual Studio Gallery. No. OK. Does it also support connecting to SharePoint Search? Not at the moment. No.
Is it possible to have a dynamic link to list you're developing?
So you want to enable a link within your application which brings you to the list itself?
Yep.
Yeah, that's absolutely no problem. Just add a custom control to your screen, and with the API, you get the URL of the list, and you can just add this link. So the intrinsic database, while you're developing, we're using LocalDB, which is part of Visual Studio. When you actually deploy your application, this is going to be, when you deploy it on Azure, it's SQL. When you deploy it on-premise, it's SQL. When you deploy it on Azure, it's SQL Azure. In the auto-hosted model, it will just do it automatically for you in the background. You don't have to worry for you. In the provider-hosted model, in the publish visit that you have seen, there is an additional tab which will ask you where your database will actually live. In the provider hosted model, you are actually reusing it for all of the applications that are installed. It's only for the auto hosted model that it is shared, that it is provisioned every time a new app is provisioned. Okay.
Can you, what is the question exactly?
Yes.
Is that going to cost you extra on top of Office 365?
The auto-hosted model is for free at the moment. Right. It will not cost you anything extra.
And is there a limit to the amount of apps that I can host in it?
I don't know. But I guess our MSDN will tell you that.
Right.
Is there any limit of auto-hosted applications that you can install on your SharePoint site? No.
Is there a path when you're feel that you're limited with LightSwitch? Is there a path to go to custom solution?
The path in LightSwitch really is you have those designers, which is like the easy to start experience, right? And then if you want to extend it, you just go to the individual hooks, the code entry points, and you can do that on the server on the middle tier, but you can also do it on the client. You can add custom controls on the client, write HTML and JavaScript. I didn't show that in this session today because I wanted to focus on the SharePoint part, but in my session on Wednesday, I showed how you can customize a lot in the HTML and the client itself. And that is actually should be good enough. We have customers having 500 screens, 200 tables, so they have really huge application built with LightSwitch. Okay? Thank you very much.